In Marriage Story, estranged couple Charlie and Nicole, played by stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, bare their souls about the trauma and healing of divorce. Directed by Noah Baumbach, the film explores the major hurdles and subtle nuances that take place between a couple as they attempt to start new lives both separately and together. This week we welcome back Julie Levac and Jolie Featherstone to talk about potential gender bias within the film and the power of humility. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screamfish. Since we've actually done this.
I know, right? It's what the people want.
That's right. That's it. We've gotten so many requests. That's the way to think of it.
They've figured.
Been from the three of us to do the request, but I mean, still, the demand is there. So, welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled this week that you could join us as we talk about Marriage Story, Noah Baumbach's latest film that explores the dissolution of a marriage, starring Scarlett Johansson and, I was going to say Kylo Ren, Adam Driver. this week we are thrilled as well to have back, the dream team has returned, Julie Levac and Jolie Featherstone. Welcome back, ladies.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, I am glad that you guys are here. Currently available on Netflix and in some select theaters, Marriage Story tells the story of a stage director and his actor wife as they struggle through a grueling coast-to-coast divorce that pushes them to their personal and creative extremes. As I said before, directed by Noah Baumbach and starring Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, the film had its premiere in Venice and came in second for the People's Choice Awards at the Toronto International Film Festival this year. And as always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But ladies, what do you think of Marriage Story?
I have to be honest with you, when I first saw the trailer for Marriage Story, we were looking through movies that we were going to see at TIFF, and I saw Marriage Story, I thought the cast was good, it was intriguing, but I gotta be honest with you, it sort of seemed a little bit dull to me, and I figured maybe it's not going to be on my must-see list, but I'll see it eventually on Netflix or something like that. I did end up seeing it in the theater with you guys, but it's just so much more than you would expect it to be. It's very smart. It's actually a lot funnier than you would expect. And I like that it portrays marriage and also the dissolution of marriage in quite a real way. It's not as cut and dry as you know, they portray it in a lot of films. It's not like, I hate you, I'm leaving sort of thing. There is still a lot of love and just that sort of, that feeling of love, but also disappointment and just feeling like you can't live with this person anymore. It's hard to put into words, but, I just think that it, like I said, was so much more, than I thought it was on the surface. And I was really happy to have seen it.
So I feel quite similarly to Julie. I so loved getting the chance to watch this film with you both. I was actually quite excited for it. I had, of course, heard about it previously when I heard the cast. I thought, oh, that's really interesting. Plus, I'm always drawn to stories about people's lives and sort of, I call them personal epics or intimate epics. So I was initially really intrigued by the premise. Obviously, the director, Noah Baumbach, and the cast looked fantastic. And as Julie mentioned, after seeing it, I was really sort of surprised and pleasantly surprised by how buoyant I found it. I found it very light, and I don't mean that in the way of saying vapid or, you know, not without depth, but I just found it lighter and more hopeful and a lot more peaceful towards the end than I anticipated. And I like, as Julie mentioned, that it really shows sort of a very organic and naturalistic view of two people in a relationship. And it's not totally black and white, and it leaves a lot of room and a lot of space for those shades of gray. And how it explores love and pain and disappointment and frustration and care and compassion. And ultimately, even though it is sort of the deterioration of their marriage, there's still a lot of love between them. And I think that that is not as unusual between two people who have ended a relationship that then, you know, movies would have it seen. So I really liked that that view of this relationship.
Yeah, when I first saw the film, I did see it at the Toronto Film Festival. And I saw it because I liked the cast and I had time. I'd heard some positive buzz. I think it was about to premiere at Venice and everybody was saying it was pretty good, so I added it to the list, but I didn't know what to expect. Honestly, I found it such a painfully honest film, and Noah Baumbach has actually spoken about how so much of his writing of this stems from the reality of the situation of his own divorce. And while she was filming this, ScarJo was going through her own divorce, which, I mean, that stuff really bleeds onto the screen. But at the same time, I like that you pointed out, like, it is true that there is a life to this film rather than just two people that hate each other. And it could have been that. They could have absolutely demonized one of the people or both of the people, made them just, you know, horrendous characters. But there is a sense of hope within this film by the end, especially, that I found particularly powerful. And, I mean, the performances, the writing, it's just all on point. Even the scenes that push for going over the top don't feel like they're going over the top to me. Like, it just felt like you were sort of a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I saw Adam Driver on Colbert, and he actually said that this movie is telling a love story through the scope of its ending. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's a divorce story, but there is still so much love there. And because it doesn't just shut off like a light switch, do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And the movie opens with Nicole and Charlie listing all of the things that they love about each other. Mm-hmm. And those things that they love are still there throughout mm-hmm. this separation. So it is just, like you said, very honest and real. And I think that's why there's so much emotion in the film, because it doesn't feel like some Hollywood blockbuster. It feels like it could happen. And we've felt these feelings before in our own lives. So, plus the incredible acting jobs, it just really brought it.
Yeah, I've heard a number of people talk about Adam Driver's talent. Of course, every director that works with their cast member talks about how good their cast is. Somebody, I forget who it was, recently said that Adam Driver is one of the best actors of his generation. And I thought, okay, well, that's a hugely gross exaggeration. But I haven't seen many films like that really give him a chance to showcase it. There have been a few I've seen him in, but I haven't seen films like Patterson or The Report. You know, I haven't seen a lot of those films, which I would like to do. But certainly I've seen ScarJo she's had incredible roles, and she's been around a lot longer. But, man, I was impressed. Like, his portrayal of Charlie, I thought, was just so forthright and present, and I believed every moment that he was in there, even the scenes where he's going too far or the scenes where he's not going far enough. Like, he's being, it just, there was such a, it was such grounded performances and a grounded script that I thought just really brings it to life. I really think this might be my pick for best picture of the year. personally.
Wow, that's a big statement.
It is.
I can see why, for sure. Yeah, my husband is a huge Adam Driver fan to the point where he's like, oh, Adam Driver's in it. I think we need to see it. You know what I mean? Because he's legit. But I really want to speak on this Scarlett Johansson scene where the first meeting with her lawyer, Laura Dern. I can't remember the lawyer's name.
Nora.
So I don't know what it was about that scene. Scarlett Johansson's acting was so bang on. She totally killed this scene. She went from not crying to crying, bawling her eyes out, and then she stopped. And then she's talking through this whole scene, this huge monologue. She's blowing her nose. I think at one point she like eats some candy in the lawyer's office. She's eating, she's blowing her nose. She walks into the bathroom and she's still talking and we don't even see her. And then she comes back out and it was like I was in the room having the conversation with her. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm so happy you brought that up, Jules, because I loved that scene. And to me, I mean, one of the biggest strengths of this movie is the performances. And certainly, I think that going into awards season, a lot of people have been talking about both Adam and Scarlett. But that scene really, really caught me. I think it was possibly one of my favorite scenes in the entire film, simply because it felt, as you mentioned, it just felt so organic. It felt so natural. You can feel that it's not quite anxiety, but this tension, this sort of tension between holding things in and release that she's going through in this scene. You know, she's talking to Nora, this woman that she doesn't even know, about things that are, you know, lodged so deeply inside that likely she hasn't spoken to many people about. And there's almost like that level of tension where she doesn't necessarily want to face Nora. She's, as you mentioned, going into the washroom. She's still talking and we can hear her. We can hear the emotion just vibrating in her voice, but we can't even see her. She's eating, she's blowing her nose, she's crying, she's holding it in. Oh my gosh, that scene I thought was incredible and just felt so natural to me. I think that it was just such a human way of expressing yourself, especially when she's sort of mining these very deep-seated, long-term feelings that have been, I would say, sort of, she's kept them sort of hidden within herself for so long. I loved that scene. I felt they both did an incredible job. I got the sense while watching the film, both through their performances, also through the writing and a little bit of the blocking as well, it almost felt like a stage play at times. Hmm. And just the chemistry that they had as well, there was this element of the theater to it. And not to say that it was theatrical acting, but it was just the way that they moved around each other and how they moved within the physical spaces of the scenes. I really got that feeling. But yeah, they both did an excellent job.
And the thing about that scene that's worth noting is, to my recollection, it's one take.
Yeah, it looked like it. And that's, like I said, Scarlett Johansson, she not only memorized that whole monologue, it was quite a long monologue, and then was doing the physical acting on top of it without even stopping. I mean, it was just, I want to be like her when I grow up.
Wait, ScarJo?
Yeah, I just wish I could act like that. Maybe I can. I haven't tried. It's fine.
Maybe you're just a hidden talent and you don't know.
I like to think so, yeah.
It could be. The other scene, you know, I like Jolie, that you brought up the fact that it felt like a stage play, because one of the other key scenes that just, I mean, draws me in every single time is when the two of them are hashing it out amongst themselves in his apartment. Because
that was a heavy one.
Oh my gosh. And it starts off so quietly, and that by the end they are thundering away at each other. To the point he actually says, I wish you were dead. I wish you would get a disease and die. As long as our kid was fine, as long as Henry was fine, I wish you were dead. And then he cries and you're like, man, this is a release of so much pent up. Now, is that before? That's after they've already been to court together, I believe. Because she confronts him on why he changed lawyers, I think, at that point. But I'm trying to remember how that falls into the chronology of it, like where that, because I don't think that settles everything.
No, not at all. You almost get the sense that it's all, I don't want to say the beginning of things, but because it's certainly not, but it does feel like a transformative moment for both of them. Absolutely. Unfortunately, I can't quite remember the chronology of where that falls exactly, but I know it's, I want to say it's sort of in the middle of the film, but yeah, I thought that was such an interesting scene because, you know, it is such a release for both of them. And yet, even though, you know, Adam sort of has the final words and they are, you know, incredibly, incredibly heavy-handed, shall we say, she embraces him.
Yeah.
Like, he feels almost so ashamed of saying that. And he almost falls to his knees and she goes and embraces him. And I think that is so indicative of this film. You know, they go through some incredible highs and lows, and yet every step of the way, despite the fact they've decided that they're, you know, legally ending their marriage, there's still a relationship between them. They still care for each other. They still love each other. It's transformed into a different way of loving each other, perhaps, but that was so indicative of this whole film, that one moment where he, you know, yells and then falls to his knees and she embraces him.
How do you think that this film compares to other films that have focused on the divorce of couples? Like, are there any key ones in your mind that connect to?
So for me, actually, I don't know if I'm just like, I love really sad movies. there was a few that came to mind prior to watching Marriage Story. One of them being Blue Valentine. And I absolutely love that film, which is similar to this film in the sense of the subject matter. It is the deterioration of a marriage, of a relationship. However, it is very different from this film, just in terms of tone. The other film that I thought of prior to seeing Marriage Story was Revolutionary Road, which for me was, I feel like you couldn't have two more different movies dealing with the same subject matter. You know, they both are looking at a couple who are sort of at the end point of their relationship. The tone is very different. They're two very different people and two very different relationships. And I love Jules mentioning that quote from Adam Driver saying that it's the love story told through the lens, or told at the ending. I can't remember the exact quote, and I'm sure I've messed it up. But that is absolutely the lens of Marriage Story, whereas Revolutionary Road is so full of pain and anger and resentment and contempt that, in all honesty, I was watching it at home. I had to turn it off and take a break and come back to it because that's how intense it was. It's an absolutely incredibly made film, but it is a very different tone. I felt it was much heavier. There was a lot more sort of anger in that story as opposed to Marriage Story, which had a lot of sort of hope and a lot of peace to it. Again, very different couple and very different circumstances. It's set, I want to say, in the 1950s, I believe. So it's just a whole different social climate as well. You know, how people viewed, you know, gender and how they viewed marriage and, you know, sort of that nuclear family and what the American dream is supposed to be and how people are supposed to act. You almost get the sense that not only is there contention between the two of them as individuals, they're almost in this pressure cooker of American society at that time, sort of dictating to them what's appropriate and what they should aspire to and who they should be. That contributes to so much kind of anger in their situation and in their relationship. Whereas Marriage Story obviously takes place modern day LA, you know, it's certainly a different social climate compared to Revolutionary Road.
You know, the funny thing is, as I was looking, looking over, let's be serious. After I Googled movies about divorce, I'm looking at them. I'm like, man, I haven't seen those movies. I haven't seen the two that you listed. I haven't seen Kramer versus Kramer. But the four that I saw and the four that I connected with, it's interesting because three of the four of them are comedies. And in some ways, I think that Marriage Story is the horrible stepchild of all of them. And I don't mean the movie's bad. I mean, it's like if when I tell you these films, like, you're going to say, what on earth is he talking about? But so, the one to give me some cinematic street cred is Sideways.
Yes.
Sideways is a beautiful film about a man who's struggling with his own divorce and he ends up in wine country. Intolerable Cruelty, which no one has seen but me, apparently.
But I'm not gonna lie, I haven't seen it.
It's a Coen Brothers comedy. It's a Coen Brothers comedy with George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones. And it's not one of their best ones, but for some reason I really like it.
I remember the poster. I didn't know it was a Coen Brothers.
Yes, it's Coen Brothers. He did that after Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yes.
Okay, First Wives Club, which again is about divorce and revenge, and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Ooh, interesting.
And I thought to myself, there's got to be no comparisons in these things other than the fact that they're in divorce, but... You know, I was looking at Marriage Story, and I'm like, my gosh, like, Mrs. Doubtfire is about how does the man continue the relationship with his kids after he's gone. First Wives Club is about trying to empower yourself after you've been wronged in a relationship. Intolerable Cruelty is about trying to one-up the other person. And Sideways is about dealing with the trauma of the event. And I thought, holy crap, if you take those four things and throw them into a blender... You get the basis for this movie. I'm certainly not even comparing their quality, but I'm just saying, like, none of the thematic structure of any of these films seems to land in the same place, but there are elements mixed in with Marriage Story in bizarre ways.
Yeah, I think the only one, I just did a quick Google of movies about divorce, and there is Mrs. Doubtfire, but also Stepmom and Parent Trap are the only ones I feel like I've seen, and all three of them do have an element of the effect of divorce, and also moving on with new partners, the effect that that has on the children. And I think that there is, in Marriage Story, they do sort of touch on that briefly with the impact on the child, and we see the inevitable sort of picking of sides, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How the son... let me just grab the son's name for you.
Henry.
Really quickly.
It's Henry.
It's Henry. Do we know the actor's name behind Henry? Oh, I believe it's called Azzy Robertson. A-Z-H-Y is the first name.
Yeah.
So we see how he sort of favors the mother because they've sort of started their new life together in California. And when the father comes to visit, he's almost treated like a bit of a stranger at that time. So that was difficult to watch. And I know that they don't dive too much into the child because I think it's very, very much Charlie and Nicole's story. But I just figured the impact on the child was worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's absolutely true because they do spend quite a bit of time in Marriage Story sort of looking at their son and sort of his relationship to them and how that sort of evolves and changes throughout the process. I also like, Steve, that you brought up all the comedies. There's quite a few comedies out there about the same subject matter. That was something I noted about Marriage Story. It was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. There's a lot more comedy in it than I was expecting.
Yeah. It could have been one of those films that just browbeats you from start to finish, but there is a levity to it throughout much of the film. It's not a heightened comedy. Like, it's just sort of awkward comedy. Like, to me, that's what made it so real. Do you feel like the film sympathizes with Charlie over Nicole or vice versa? Or what do you think?
I think in general, it sort of sympathized with both characters at different times, because at the beginning we see first, I think it was Nicole talking about Charlie, reading all of the things that she loves about him and vice versa. It gives each party, you know, equal screen time, so to speak. And then throughout the film, when we see the separation, we see Nicole in California, you know, that's sort of her side of the story. And then you do see where it sort of flips. And then we see more of Charlie's side of the story. So I think that we do, because it's sort of coming from their perspective, we see things through their lens and we sympathize with them accordingly. I do think, though, that there was a little bit more sympathy in Charlie's court, because Nicole moves in with her mom and she seems to have that support system in California. And she seems to sort of get back on her feet a little bit quicker than Charlie. Charlie seems to be a little bit more lost because obviously his child isn't even in the same state as him. And he has to keep flying back and forth and he's spread really thin with the theater and then going to California and having to have two homes, basically living in two different places. And also the fact that Nicole was the first one to go to the lawyer and sort of spring that on Charlie. So I just think those little aspects were a little bit more like you feel a little bit bad for Charlie in comparison.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Jules on that. I think that Noah Baumbach did strive to show a fairly balanced view. I think he really intended to show compassion to both characters. And overall, I would say he did a good job of that. I definitely feel that there was a bias towards feeling sympathetic towards Charlie, whether that was simply because it is Noah Baumbach telling his story and Charlie is sort of the character that he identifies with. You know, it could just be sort of an unconscious bias in that way. But I certainly felt that, as Jules mentioned in the beginning of the film, we see a bit more of Nicole's story and her side of things. Halfway through, it really sort of reverts over to Charlie. But I think overall, the story does kind of give the sort of sympathetic hand more to Charlie by nature of he's the one that's traveling, even though he does have a life, a career, and actually a girlfriend, I guess, back home in New York. He's the one sort of shown traveling and being sort of uprooted from that. Also, as Jules mentioned, Nicole's the first one to go to a lawyer. And I really like how they handled that. You know, I think both of them kind of ended up in a situation that they didn't anticipate being in. I don't think that Nicole really realized how kind of intense things were going to get by going to the lawyer. And we sort of see Charlie as kind of constantly defending himself throughout the latter half of the movie. So I did feel it was a bit biased in that sense.
See, that's interesting, because what surprised me about a film like this is how much empathy there was towards Charlie. Now, again, because we've said we don't know how much this is coming from Baumbach's story, but we do know it's coming from Baumbach's experience and his perspective. But, you know, you talk about him having a girlfriend. He didn't have a girlfriend. There was a girl he slept with once, and they don't make a big deal about it. You know, Nicole says, "You cheated on me." And he said, "Well, we'd already stopped having sex. I was sleeping on the couch. It happened once. Do you love her?" "No, but she didn't treat me badly." And she says, "Well, why I should be coming over." And he says, "No, I have no, like, he's not interested in that." And yet at the same time, Nicole has clearly been wronged as well. Charlie is so stubborn in his ideas about staying in New York City. You know, and, you know, Nicole says, "I want to go visit my parents more." And it's interesting, you know, especially in that courtroom, how the little things get spun around. So I think this was just me. To me, it felt really balanced because I expected the husband to be completely demonized. But everything that he did wrong and everything that she did wrong, because they both did wrong things, were either somehow justified and demonized at the same time. It was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think certainly all of the sort of things that take place during their relationship came out, as you mentioned, justified or at least sort of understandable. They both, you know, they both weren't necessarily bringing their best selves or being the best partner to each other. I certainly don't think that there was one person who was guiltier per se in the relationship at all. I definitely think that was sort of a thing that was mutual between the two of them. I just felt that how the film was shot and the way that it was written, you know, we, as Jules mentioned, we kind of see Nicole have a bit of a, not an upper hand per se, but we see that she has a support system, she has a home, she's, you know, adjusting to her new life and embracing it, whereas we show sort of Charlie being the one to take the time and the energy and the money, having to
right.
kind of go out to LA and whatnot. Whereas it's sometimes hard to remember during the film that, you know, Nicole hadn't been home for a long time, even though she wanted to be there. So although it seems that she is adapting so quickly, I imagine for her character, it probably felt like a long time coming, you know, probably felt very comforting to be back there.
There were definitely a few things that got my back up about Charlie, which was number one, that he had cheated, because it sort of came out of nowhere. We didn't even have some sort of thought that maybe he was cheating. She was just like, yeah, and I think he cheated on me. Or I think he got pulled aside by that woman mm-hmm. at the theater, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was that when they were at, I guess, the mother's house in California, she had dyed her hair and cut it. And mm-hmm. he said, oh, did you dye your hair? Is it shorter? Because I like it longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was sort of like, oh, because like you have a say in that, even if you're married, like, is that your business? Sorry.
I know this comment as well.
Yeah. So.
No, I think it's indicative though, right, of the kind of relationship they had, especially because we're finally getting to see both of them, but certainly Nicole kind of unleash all these feelings that she had sort of held within, and one of them being, you know, that she felt she didn't really have a voice anymore, and she felt that a lot of her life was kind of dictated by him. And I think him saying that really kind of painted a picture as to how the dynamic was.
Yeah, it validated it, validated those feelings that she had, for me at least. And mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. It's an interesting point in general about how, you know, when you're in a relationship, still having that individuality and following your own dreams as opposed to sort of just stopping who you are and feeding into your spouse's dreams. So if that's how she felt, and it did seem that it was sort of his life there at the theater and being a director, and she sort of stopped what she was doing to be there. Yeah, I can totally understand how she could feel like she wasn't her anymore.
Mm-hmm. You see, that to me is the kicker. I think what the film acknowledges really, really well is they both had different goals they needed to find. And for her, it was certainly a sense of self-discovery. You know, she makes a comment. She says, I never really came alive for myself. I was just feeding his aliveness. But, you know, they try to indicate that she's lived in his shadow. But then as the arguments happen, we see that she's helped, like, the two of them to have truly been a team, but her spark was being quelled. And you could see, like you said, in the moments with the hair, subtle things like that, the control, the desire for control. But at the same time, you know, like, to me, this is all held up really, really well in the finale, because they both sing in the finale. They both have mm-hmm. song montages that are held up against each other. She sings a happy song with her sister and her mother and mm-hmm. says, Bobby is my hobby and I'm giving him up. And there's this life to it. And meanwhile, he's in a bar and he's singing, feeling alive. You know, he's doing that thing.
That was so emotional when he was doing that.
It is. It's so, but it's a different type of emotion. But at the same time, both of them, like, I didn't get the sense that she was stomping on his grave with Bobby's my hobby and giving it up.
Yeah.
She's not rejoicing. In fact, right before that, Nora says to her, you know, I took an extra day of your time with your kid. And she said, but I don't want that. She said, well, I don't want him bragging about it. Like, there's this, Nor is out to win. She's out to find a balance. But so I didn't get that sense that I just felt like her was coming alive. For him, it's like a moment of, I don't know how to explain what his moment is, but it's almost like contemplation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, he does things and he's a jerk. Like, he, at times, he's a real jerk. At times, he's a wonderful father that she acknowledges. And she is an incredible mother and an incredible actress and this wonderful things, but she also has her issues that come out in the relationship. Like, it seems like it's almost like a chess match. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm the man here. So maybe I'm being sympathetic just instinctively towards towards Charlie.
No, I think that's the overall tone. Like, maybe not by a long shot, but there is definitely, like, Charlie is a little bit more down in the dumps and he's going to take a little bit longer to kind of get over it and rebuild himself. Whereas Nicole has already started. She's already on her way. She's, like I said, she's got that support system and she's doing her thing. I think it was an interesting scene where she was at, I guess it was a Halloween party. She was dressed in that yellow suit or something like that after she had dyed her hair blonde. And she was like screaming at him in the phone. And then there was just an air of confidence to her. Like, before, she seemed a little bit more internal and, I don't know, like, less confident. And then there was that switch, sort of, I found at that point in the film, that night, that party, that's when she sort of took off in the other direction.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, like, I don't think it was per se a conscious choice on Baumbach's part to sort of favor Charlie in terms of garnering sympathy or empathy, but I think it is just sort of a natural thing considering he's writing about his own story. And to that point about Nicole and Charlie, I just feel it's very subtle. It's not like they're really holding it right in front of your face, like, you should feel sympathy for this one character more than the other. It's just very subtle. For example, I felt that they showed more scenes of Charlie having sort of, I want to say, almost private moments or very reflective moments, whereas we don't really get that with Nicole. And again, it just could be a limitation of the fact that, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh isn't writing part of the script to shed light on her side of her experience. But I just feel we get more private moments with Charlie, you know, the scene in the kitchen with his son with the knife accident, and he's lying on the floor, you know, or just moments where he's with his first lawyer that he sort of signs on to. You just get a sense that he's a bit more withdrawn. He's really reflective. Whereas with Nicole, she's almost not really given scenes like that because she's constantly surrounded by people, whether it be her son or her mom or her sister. You know, we don't really see her having those private kind of reflective moments as much.
That's true. I hadn't considered that. There are a lot less moments where we get to see Nicole be Nicole outside of being a member of her family or the mother of her child. You know, it's interesting.
I think you just articulated it. You know, we see Charlie as an individual, even though he is a great dad. I almost felt like we got more of a chance to see him as an individual going through this difficult experience, whereas Nicole, I felt, was really often portrayed as a mother, a sister, a daughter kind of thing.
But don't forget, there are those conversations, those scenes where she is on set. Filming her pilot, giving her feedback, stepping up to be a director. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she's not behind the camera in the scenes we get to see, but she's being assertive and starting to step into that, and you get to see a little bit of that. His journey, to me, seemed like it was much more coming towards himself emotionally, and her journey was much more exploring what it means to be her practically, but maybe that, I don't know whether I'm saying that well or not.
No, I think that makes sense, yeah.
What do you think? What do you both think that they may have learned at the end of the film? Because I mean, the ending of the film, for all of this back and forth, ends on a very subtle moment of hope. It's a very positive ending.
It was a beautiful ending, actually, because I think that it was. I mean, it's just the selfless act of bending down to tie his shoe. It was very powerful. It, like you said, subtle but powerful. And I think that they've realized, I think that they're acknowledging that there still is a love there. They have weathered, I would say, a decent majority of the storm, and they're starting to build their lives individually, but still, you know, as co-parents. So I think that they've got respect for each other, especially as parents to their child. And yeah, it is definitely hopeful as they look towards sort of rebuilding a life.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that that final scene was such a poignant moment. And they do sort of look at each other, and there's sadness there, but there's also appreciation, there's respect, there's care, there's love. I felt it was such a peaceful moment, you know. You didn't feel, okay, everything's all well and good, everything's resolved, and we can put this behind us. No, it's something that, you know, they're going to be dealing with for a while. It may be something that they are continuously processing for a long time, but at the end of the day, you do feel that there is a very kind of foundational sense of love and care between them, even if it's no longer in the context of a marriage or a romantic relationship. And I'm actually sort of reminded of a line from Stepmom. I watched that movie a lot as a kid. I don't know why.
I mean, Julia Roberts in her prime.
Right? And Susan Sarandon, like Ed Harris, Jenna Malone. I mean, I really don't know why we watched it so much as kids, because it is a really sad movie, but we watched it all the time. And I remember one line always stuck out to me when Ed Harris is talking to his kids. You know, they're really kind of questioning him about, you know, his divorce. You know, these are young kids and their parents are no longer together and they're curious. You get the sense it's the first time they're having a conversation about it. And Ed Harris, again, so sorry, I can't remember verbatim, but he says something like, I never stopped loving your mom. It just became a different kind of love. And we see throughout that film, you know, their mom goes through cancer and she goes through a really difficult time. And even though they're not in a romantic relationship with each other, they do still kind of show up for each other. And I was sort of reminded of that through this conversation in Marriage Story. You get the sense that, you know, they certainly are still showing up for their son and still dedicated to being great parents to him. They're committed to doing that together. And you do get the sense that they will be supporting each other, at least as co-parents going forward.
See, I love the way that you ladies put that. I sort of thought that it was, you know, you talk about love, going off what you said, Joliet. I thought about humility, and especially in the way they communicate. Like, that's the one thing that really breaks my heart about the film, because I see there and I thought, man, if you knew that at the beginning, like, like maybe it could have been avoided. I don't know, because by the end, there seems to be more humility just in those moments, like when in those few brief conversations where she says things like, you know, he's tired, will you take him? And he says, well, it's your night. Like, he's not gonna, I'm not gonna take the extra time here. It's your night, you get to. No, you take him. Oh, okay. And there's a give, and you get this sense that, you know, that was always there, but they somehow lost it. And when she ties his shoe, it's such a subtle moment, but it's a moment of genuine care. And his move to LA, I took the job here. And, you know, she says, oh, well, it's good. It's all good. All good things. And I thought to myself, man, because this is a couple that, like, at one point in the film, they're talking about the move, and Charlie says, we discussed things We were married. We said things. We talked about moving to Europe, about getting a sideboard, or what do you call it, a credenza, to fill that empty space behind the couch, but we never did any of it. Mm-hmm. You know, here's somebody who said, yeah, in my mind, this was not a thing that... I mean, we talked about all sorts of things, that, but in you can see from him, it's such a narrow-minded approach. But on the same token, you know, when Nora confronts him on it earlier on, she says, it's a deal when it's something you want and a discussion when Nicole wants it. Like, there's this pulling out. The battleground seems to be all about control, and then at the end of the film, it's almost like they've... Not that they've given that up, because they have certain rights and things that, like... you know, rules, but there's this genuine sense of, you know what, I'm not only going to do what's best for Henry, which is what they say the entire film, I'm going to do what's best for you, or at least that's what I felt. And to me, that was really, really beautiful. And I mean, it's funny, like there's a funny shot at the end where the family is all dressed as Sergeant Pepper and he's a ghost. Like, I sat there and I laughed because it was so awkward and funny, but at the same time, it broke my heart because I'm like, okay, so is he dead to them? Like, is that what they're showing? But he's not. It's just that something new is sort of formed and they've figured it out. Like, the fact that she ties his shoes is an act of service. Like you were saying, it's like, you know what? Let me do something for you. Oh man, to me it was just such a beautiful way to end it, because I thought, okay, when they come to a place where they're not arguing over who gets the couch, as at one point he talks about in a bar, it gives them a chance to really support what the other person is doing. Or that's what I saw.
I thought it was interesting how there were multiple people throughout the entire film who kept reiterating the point that, you know, Charlie should move to L.A. because there's so much more space in L.A. And that was said so many different times. And I keep getting, like, flashbacks to the scene. I think it was when Charlie was talking on the phone. He was in New York. He's talking on the phone to the lawyer in L.A. And he's sort of wandering through the theater, going down the stairs, and he makes his way out to the streets of New York. And there, it's just absolute chaos. There's a huge crowd of people, and he's just sort of standing amongst the crowd of people on the phone, and it sort of... I think it pans back, but to me that just totally spoke to the chaos in his mind at the moment, but also the claustrophobia. And then we get all these people constantly saying there's more space in LA. And I don't really know the symbolism behind it, or if there's some message that Noah Baumbach was trying to say, but it was interesting how many times it was mentioned.
Yeah. It's a funny analogy that it keeps coming up. And I don't know whether it's something about, you know, Nora just trying to convince them, you know, everybody's trying to say, oh, just make the best of it. But certainly it's a theme that keeps recurring, you know, that it could have something to do with the fact that, you know, since they're going to be around together, they're not going to be in each other's faces at the same time, but it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, maybe it is like there's not enough space for both of them in New York sort of thing.
That's a good point. I didn't pick up on it as being, you know, referencing space between them, but that's a really, really good point. I didn't think of that. It was funny how, like, the cadence of how it kind of just gets, like, dropped in as, oh, you know, you should be happy, you're going to L.A., there's so much space, you know. I certainly think it did kind of hammer home the difference between the two, in the sense of, you know, she does mention, like, he seems like more of a New Yorker than a true New Yorker, even though he's originally from the Midwest. And he does seem so at ease in the New York art world, whereas she, you know, hails from LA and feels comfortable there. I definitely felt like it was just kind of really hammering home this sort of divide between them, and this sort of her wanting to go back, and him really wanting to kind of have that foothold in New York.
Yeah, I think you're right. Ladies, thank you so much. I think we should probably start to wrap it up here. I am really looking forward to hearing what you say, but we need to screen it or skip it. Marriage Story, screen it or skip it?
I think definitely screen it. It's going to be a lot more than you think it's going to be. It's deep, it's emotional, but it's also super funny and smart and witty. And it's a real look. And I think no matter where you are in your life or where you are in a relationship or not, I think that there are emotions in this film that we can all relate to. And so I think that it is definitely worth the watch.
I'm with Jules. I think it's a screen it. I don't necessarily think that you need to see it on the big screen. You could certainly watch it on Netflix, as it is a Netflix film. it's not one that I think would change your experience of it, watching it on a big screen versus watching it at home. But certainly give it a watch. I think that if anything, it might reinvigorate your hope in humanity and hope in relationships, seeing two people, you know, go through really difficult transition in their relationship, but still have love and care and compassion for each other.
And I think that it shows that it's okay that the relationship isn't a storybook marriage. You know what I mean? It's okay if you can't be together anymore, and it's okay to still love each other. It's not so black and white. And I appreciate that the film sort of highlighted that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is a rare case where seeing it and streaming it are landing in the same way.
Yes.
Because this is absolutely a Netflix jam, and it's on Netflix. And so I do recommend watching it. Absolutely. I think it is honestly my pick for, so far, maybe my pick for best film of the year. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It is soulful. It is funny. It is intimate and personal, and yet also, I don't even, it's just beautiful. Beautifully written, beautifully performed. It just hit on every level for me. You may need to go to marital counseling after you've seen it. but it is honestly just a wonderful film. It's a strong screen it for me. I really think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, it's such a unique piece too. Like we were just trying to compare it to other movies about divorce. It's incomparable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing quite like it. It's got that interesting combination of different factors. So that's another reason why I think you should see it, because you know, you probably haven't seen anything like it.
I agree 100%.
I think that's a really good point, Jules. There at least I'm in my mind right now, there isn't anything I could quite compare it with. So for anyone who may be put off with the subject matter, they hear, oh, it's a film about divorce, and they immediately go to, you know, thoughts of, again, Blue Valentine or Revolutionary Road, which are, you know, quite contentious and quite intense. There is sort of a poignancy and a levity and a good heart to Marriage Story that will make you feel a bit more hopeful than you might think.
Ladies, thank you so much. I absolutely love chatting with you. I know, because we do it regularly.
yeah, we do.
So thankful to have you back on. I always am. So thank you again. And for you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available: SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Podomatic. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. And if you go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you can have after you see the film as well, or with the people that you see it with. We will be back next week with our Christmas spectacular. I won't give too many details, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And I can't... Man, I'm sorry, I'm losing it. Ugga mugga, everyone. And
that should be our new sign off.
That's our new sign off. That's it.
We need to find sort of an audible equivalent to, like, hanging up a cardigan. Do you know, like some sort of finale.
I like that idea. What does
that even mean?
No, not necessarily, not specifically a cardigan, but symbolically.
You know what I mean? So we need to find a symbolic cardigan. Exactly. Audio symbolic cardigan. Okay, yeah. I'll see what I can find for free.
Please. I mean, should be really simple.
Ladies, again, thank you so much. For you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
Booyah.